This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of terrible triad injuries of the elbow from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. Starting with a quick summary, a terrible triad injury of the elbow is a traumatic injury pattern of the elbow characterized by three factors: elbow dislocation, radial head or neck fracture, and a coronoid fracture. Diagnosis can be made with plain radiographs of the elbow, but CT studies are helpful for surgical planning. Treatment of terrible triad injuries is generally with ORIF versus radial head arthroplasty in combination with LCL reconstruction, coronoid ORIF, and possible MCL reconstruction. In this episode, we will discuss the etiology, relevant anatomy, clinical presentation, imaging findings, treatment options, treatment techniques, as well as the complications and prognosis of terrible triad injuries of the elbow. Starting with the etiology, again, the terrible triad is characterized by the presence of three injuries: an elbow dislocation, which is often associated with posterolateral dislocation or lateral collateral ligament injury, radial head or neck fracture, and a coronoid fracture. Regarding the pathophysiology and mechanism of these injuries, they are commonly the result of a fall on an extended arm that results in a combination of valgus, axial, and posterolateral rotatory forces which produce a posterolateral dislocation. The relevant pathoanatomy in relation to this pattern of injury relates to the structures of the elbow failing from lateral to medial. In these injuries, the LCL is first disrupted, followed by the anterior capsule and possibly MCL disruption. Providing some more detail on the other relevant anatomy to be aware of for these injuries, we will provide more detail on the radial head, coronoid process, medial collateral ligament, and lateral collateral ligament. The radial head acts as a primary restraint to posterolateral rotatory instability, as well as a secondary valgus stabilizer. Notably, with the forearm in neutral rotation, the lateral portion of the articular margin of the radial head is devoid of cartilage. This area lies roughly between the radial styloid and Lister's tubercle. The coronoid process provides an anterior and varus buttress to the ulnohumeral joint and resists posterior subluxation beyond 30 degrees of flexion. Typically, a fracture fragment of the coronoid process has some of the anterior capsule attached to it, which may be useful in repair of these injuries. The medial collateral ligament is made of three components: the anterior bundle, posterior bundle, and the transverse ligament. The anterior bundle is the most important to stability, providing restraint to valgus and posteromedial rotatory instability. The anterior bundle inserts on the sublime tubercle, or the anteromedial facet of the coronoid, specifically inserting 18.4 mm dorsal to the tip of the coronoid process. Finally, the lateral collateral ligament inserts on the supinator crest, distal to the lesser sigmoid notch, and acts as the primary restraint to posterolateral rotatory instability. There are four components of the LCL: the lateral ulnar collateral ligament, radial collateral ligament, annular ligament, and accessory collateral ligament. The lateral ulnar collateral ligament is the most important for stability. When injured, the LCL is usually avulsed off the lateral epicondyle. Again, the lateral ulnar collateral ligament is the most important for stability of the LCL. On clinical presentation, these patients present with symptoms of pain, clicking, and locking with the elbow in extension. On physical examination, it can be possible to note varus or valgus instability patterns, and it should be noted that the DRUJ or the distal radial ulnar joint must be evaluated for possible Essex-Lopresti injuries. Reviewing the imaging findings, AP and lateral radiographs of the elbow should be taken and evaluated for concentricity of the ulnohumeral and radiocapitellar joints. The line drawn through the center of the radial neck should intersect with the center of the capitellum. This is regardless of the radiographic projection. Pre- and post-reduction films should be taken. The lateral radiograph should be evaluated for coronoid fracture. Simultaneously, we must consider PA and lateral films of the wrist and forearm if indicated. CT scans are often utilized for better visualization of coronoid fractures and 3D imaging for determining fracture line propagation. Moving on to discuss the treatment options for terrible triad injuries of the elbow, we will discuss the non-operative and operative approaches. Non-operative intervention with sling immobilization in 90 degrees of flexion for 7 to 10 days is rarely indicated. The ulnohumeral joints and radiocapitellar joints must be concentrically reduced. The radial head fracture must not meet surgical indications. The coronoid fracture must be small. And the elbow should be sufficiently stable to allow for early range of motion. This non-operative approach should be performed with 1 week of immobilization followed by progressive range of motion. Active motion should be initiated with a resting splint at 90 degrees and forearm pronation, avoiding terminal extension. After 4 to 6 weeks, static progressive extension splinting at night may be commenced, and a strengthening protocol may be undertaken after 6 weeks. Operative treatment options include ORIF versus radial head arthroplasty, lateral collateral ligament reconstruction, coronoid open reduction internal fixation, and possible MCL reconstruction. Operative intervention is indicated for a terrible triad injury that includes an unstable radial head fracture, a type 3 coronoid fracture, and an associated elbow dislocation. It should be noted that coronoid fractures involving less than 10% of the coronoid do not confer elbow stability in cadaveric studies and therefore do not require repair. Should instability persist after addressing the radial head and the lateral collateral ligament complex in the presence of a small coronoid fracture, the next best step is MCL reconstruction. Now, we'll delve a little further into these techniques, including ORIF versus radial head replacement, coronoid ORIF, lateral collateral ligament reconstruction, and possible MCL reconstruction. Regarding the surgical approach to these injuries, a posterior skin incision is advantageous as it allows access to both medial and lateral aspects of the elbow and a lower risk of injury to the cutaneous nerves. It is also considered more cosmetic. Providing more detail on radial head ORIF and arthroplasty, radial head ORIF is indicated for non-comminuted fractures that involve less than 40% of the articular surface. 1.5, 2.0, or 2.4 mm countersunk screws are commonly used, and a plate may be used if necessary. A 2.0 plate causes minimal loss of motion even when placed on the radial neck. The plate should be positioned posterolaterally in the safe zone located at the 90 to 110 degree arc from the radial styloid to Lister's tubercle with the arm in neutral rotation. Radial head arthroplasty is indicated for comminuted radial head fractures with greater than 3 pieces present. Implants should articulate 2 mm distal to the tip of the coronoid process. And remember that performing radial head resection without replacement is not indicated in the presence of an Essex-Lopresti injury or in ligamentously injured elbows. If less than 25% of the head is damaged or fragments are non-reconstructable and they are non-articulating, they can be excised from the fractured portion if the elbow is stable. But remember, this is rarely indicated. Moving on to discuss coronoid ORIF, this can be fixed through the radial head defect laterally. Sutures, suture anchors, screws, or rarely plate fixation can be utilized. Sutures are passed through 2 drill holes, or posterior to anterior lag screws can be used if the fragment is large enough. Basal coronoid fractures are rare and can be fixed with anteromedial or a medial plate on the proximal ulna. For the rare isolated coronoid fracture, an FCU split approach may be preferred. Regarding the technique for LCL repair, again, the LCL is usually avulsed from the origin on the lateral epicondyle. It should be reattached to this origin with suture anchors or transosseous sutures. The LCL must be reattached at the center of the capitellar curve on the lateral epicondyle. Note that if the MCL is intact, the LCL is repaired with the forearm in pronation. However, if the MCL is injured, then the LCL is repaired with the forearm in supination to avoid medial gapping due to over-tightening. Repairs are performed with the elbow at 90 degrees of flexion. Lastly, regarding MCL repair, this is only indicated if instability on exam persists after LCL and fracture fixation, especially with the elbow in extension beyond 30 degrees. Regarding the postoperative protocol for these injuries, elbow fixators, whether hinged or static, may be considered when instability is noted after complete bone and soft tissue repair. Immobilization may also be considered, particularly with the elbow in flexion and the forearm in pronation, to provide stability against posterior subluxation. If both the MCL and LCL were repaired, then splint in flexion and neutral rotation. Regarding postoperative rehabilitation, active range of motion exercises should be initiated within 48 hours after surgery to improve functional outcomes. Lastly, we'll discuss the complications and prognosis for terrible triad injuries. The complications include instability, failure of internal fixation, post-traumatic stiffness, heterotopic ossification, and post-traumatic arthritis. Elbow instability is more common in type 1 or 2 coronoid fractures, remembering the Reagan and Mori classification to include types 1, 2, and 3 coronoid fractures, type 1 being coronoid process tip fractures, type 2 being fractures of 50% or less of the height of the coronoid, and type 3 being fractures of more than 50% of the height of the coronoid. Failure of internal fixation occurs most commonly following repair of radial neck fractures, as poor vascularity leads to osteonecrosis and non-union. Post-traumatic stiffness is also very common, and should be prevented with initiation of early range of motion. Heterotopic ossification is another complication to consider, and prophylaxis should be considered in patients with head injuries or in settings of revision surgery. Lastly, post-traumatic arthritis is common and can be due to chondral damage at the time of injury and/or residual instability. The prognosis of these injuries is historically poor, secondary to persistent instability, stiffness, and arthrosis. Now that we've gotten a general overview of this topic, let's review a few questions to see how this material has been tested in the past. Question 1. A 41-year-old male sustains an injury to his elbow after slipping on ice. Radiographs reveal a posterolateral elbow dislocation. On physical exam, he's unable to extend the IP joint of his thumb. Which of the following factors would most likely lead to the surgeon's use of a radial head arthroplasty in this case? Is it 1. Age greater than 40 years old? 2. Fracture in the sagittal plane? 3. Greater than 3 fracture fragments? 4. Continued instability after attempted open reduction internal fixation? Or 5. Preoperative PIN palsy? The correct answer is 3. Greater than 3 fracture fragments. Patients with radial head fractures consisting of 3 or more fragments are not considered candidates for ORIF and are best treated with radial head arthroplasty. The combination of an elbow dislocation, radial head fracture, and coronoid fracture is commonly known as a terrible triad injury to the elbow. Treatment of the radial head is an important aspect to the overall treatment of these patients. Radial head arthroplasty is recommended for fracture patterns in which there are 3 or more fragments that consist of greater than 25% of the radial head. ORIF is considered not feasible for these kinds of injuries, and radial head arthroplasty provides good outcomes in this subset of patients. Furthermore, radial head excision is not recommended, given the secondary stabilization of the ligamentous injury provided by the radial head. Matthew et al. Provided the current concepts in terrible triad injuries of the elbow. They report that the combination of an elbow dislocation, radial head fracture, and coronoid process fracture consistently have poor outcomes when treated non-operatively. They concluded that the primary goal of surgical fixation is to stabilize the elbow and allow early range of motion. Steinman reviewed the treatment of coronoid process fractures. In discussing coronoid tip fractures as it relates to terrible triad injuries, they review that this injury is commonly the result of a valgus and supination moment to the forearm. The radial head is fractured as it gets forced up into and then under the capitellum. Progressive valgus force drives the coronoid under the trochlea, resulting in the commonly seen coronoid tip fracture. They conclude that the treatment of the coronoid tip fractures can be performed through either a posterior or lateral incision, with the author's preference being posterior because of the versatility and exposure of the medial and lateral aspects of the elbow. Ring reviewed open reduction internal fixation of fractures of the radial head. He reported that complex fractures of the radial head are prone to early failure, non-union, and poor forearm rotation after operative fixation. He concluded that improved functional outcomes are seen with metal radial head arthroplasties that have redefined radial head treatment. Regarding the incorrect answers, answer 1, an age greater than 40 years old, is not a contraindication to ORIF. 2, a a fracture in the sagittal plane is incorrect, as simple fracture patterns in the sagittal plane can be treated with ORIF. 4. Continued instability after attempted open reduction internal fixation is incorrect, as ligamentous repair, not replacement of the radial head, should be performed if there is instability following radial head ORIF. And 5, a preoperative PIN palsy is incorrect, as preoperative PIN palsy is not an indication for radial head arthroplasty. Next question. A 21-year-old football player is tackled as he falls onto an outstretched arm. He sustains a terrible triad injury of the elbow with a comminuted radial head and neck fracture, a displaced coronoid fracture, and a posterior elbow dislocation. He undergoes successful operative treatment of his injury. In which order did his injury occur? Is it 1. MCL followed by LCL followed by anterior capsule, 2. MCL followed by anterior capsule followed by LCL, 3. Anterior capsule followed by MCL followed by LCL, 4. LCL followed by anterior capsule followed by MCL, or 5. LCL followed by MCL followed by anterior capsule. The correct answer is 4, LCL followed by anterior capsule followed by MCL. This patient sustained a terrible triad injury of the elbow, which progresses from the LCL to the anterior capsule then to the MCL. Terrible triad injuries of the elbow are traumatic injuries that occur after a fall onto an extended arm that results in a combination of valgus, axial, and posterolateral rotatory forces. The key features of a terrible triad injury include a radial head fracture, a coronoid fracture, and an elbow dislocation. Disruption of the structures in the elbow characteristically occurs from lateral to medial, affecting the LCL first, followed by the anterior capsule, and then the MCL. Outcomes following terrible triad injuries have historically been poor. However, more recent literature has shown that good outcomes can be achieved with surgical stabilization of the elbow followed by an early rehabilitation protocol. Some authors use temporary immobilization, but range of motion exercises are typically initiated by 48 hours postoperatively. Active range of motion is particularly important as it recruits muscles that act as dynamic stabilizers of the elbow. Depending on the injury, method of fixation, and stability that is achieved, the range of motion may be limited to 30 degrees of extension during the early postoperative period, but should allow full flexion. Giannicola et al. In 2013 performed a study to determine the critical time period for recovery of functional range of motion after surgical treatment of complex elbow instability. They found that the first 6 months after surgery represent the critical rehabilitation period to obtain a functional elbow, and that elbow flexion recovered at a rate slower than that of other elbow movements. They recommend that following complex elbow instability surgical treatment, a rehabilitation program should be started promptly and should be continued for at least 6 months because a significant improvement of range of motion occurs in this period. Giannicola et al. In 2015 performed a study analyzing the predictability of outcomes for terrible triad injuries, treated according to current diagnostic and surgical protocols. They found that the current diagnostic and therapeutic protocols allow for satisfactory clinical outcomes in a majority of cases, but a high number of major and minor unpredictable complications still persist. Low compliance, obesity, and extensive soft tissue elbow damage caused by high energy trauma represented negative prognostic factors unrelated to surgery. McKee et al. Performed a review on their standard surgical protocol for the treatment of elbow dislocations with radial head fractures and coronoid fractures. Their surgical protocol included fixation or replacement of the radial head, fixation of the coronoid fracture if possible, and repair of associated capsular and lateral ligamentous injuries. And, in selected cases, repair of the medial collateral ligament and/or adjuvant hinged external fixation. They found that their surgical protocol restored sufficient elbow stability to allow early motion postoperatively, enhancing the functional outcome. They recommend early operative repair with a standard protocol for these injuries. Regarding the incorrect answers, the remaining answers are incorrect as terrible triad injuries occur from the LCL to the anterior capsule and then the MCL. Last question. A 40-year-old male presents following an ATV accident. Radiographs demonstrate a terrible triad injury of the elbow with a radial head fracture, coronoid fracture, and elbow dislocation. He undergoes a successful closed reduction in the emergency department, and post-reduction CT scan reveals a comminuted radial head fracture. Which of the following should be recommended for the radial head fracture of this patient? Is it 1. Fragment excision, 2. Open reduction internal fixation, 3. radiohead arthroplasty, 4, radiohead resection, or 5, radiocapitellar arthroplasty. The correct answer is 3, radiohead arthroplasty. This patient sustained a terrible triad injury, and due to the degree of radiohead comminution, radiohead replacement is indicated. The degree of fracture displacement, comminution, and radiohead involvement directs the treatment of radiohead fractures. ORIF has shown to result in worse outcomes in fractures with 3 or more fragments as compared to those with fewer, and as a result, radiohead arthroplasty is recommended for these cases. In the setting of a terrible triad injury, radiohead resection is contraindicated as it may result in instability. Hijink et al. Reported on the short-term results of 6 patients who were treated by radiocapitellar prosthetic arthroplasty for isolated radiocapitellar degenerative arthritis in the ligamentously intact elbow. Several of these patients had been previously treated with ORIF for fractures of the elbow. They reported an implant survival rate of 100% with improvements in motion. The authors concluded that the short-term follow-up results of radiocapitellar prosthetic arthroplasty for isolated radiocapitellar degenerative arthritis in the ligamentously intact elbow and forearm seems favorable. Acevedo et al. Reviewed the use of radiohead arthroplasty for the treatment of complex radiohead fractures, elbow instability, and arthritic conditions. They report that press-fit devices restore stability and improve pain and motion, but are associated with a greater likelihood of implant loosening, leading to revision surgery. The authors concluded that adequate knowledge of the surgical indications, types of implants, and surgical techniques are essential for a satisfactory outcome when a radiohead prosthesis is used for the treatment of non-reconstructable radiohead fractures. Regarding the incorrect answers, answer 1, fragment excision, is incorrect as fragment excision may be appropriate for small radiohead fractures that do not contribute significantly to the stability and are otherwise not amenable to ORIF. Due to the severe comminution of the radiohead fracture in this patient, this is not an appropriate treatment modality. Answer 2, ORIF, is incorrect, as ORIF may be appropriate for radiohead fractures with a few large fragments, less than 3. However, this patient has significant radiohead comminution and greater than 50% joint involvement and would benefit more from a radiohead replacement. Answer 4, radiohead resection, is incorrect, as this is reserved as a salvage treatment typically reserved for a low-demand, sedentary patient and is contraindicated in patients with elbow instability such as in terrible triad injuries. And lastly, answer 5, radiocapitellar arthroplasty, is incorrect, as the indications for radiocapitellar replacements are limited, but typically reserved for patients who suffer from post-traumatic or primary radiocapitellar osteoarthritis and who have failed other treatment options. That is all for this review about terrible triad injuries of the elbow. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or the mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you are not already, please be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.